In a society where loner has become shorthand for psychotic murderer and loneliness is treated as a public health crisis, Sarah Maitland offers a revolutionary perspective. Living in rural Scotland, where her nearest neighbor is miles away, she often goes days without seeing another person, and she absolutely loves it. Her experience challenges our deep cultural anxiety about solitude. What if being alone isn't something to fear, but something to embrace? What if solitude offers gifts that constant connection cannot provide? This quiet manifesto has become something of a cult classic among creative professionals who recognize that in our hyper-connected age, the ability to be contentedly alone might be our most radical act of self-determination. We've developed a profound cultural phobia of solitude. The accusations against it are numerous, that it's unnatural, humans are pack animals, pathological, psychology insists relationships are necessary for health, and dangerous, physically and psychically risky. The moral arguments are even more absurd, that solitude is self-indulgent, escapist, antisocial, and evades social responsibility. These criticisms reveal important questions we're avoiding about what relationships actually provide, whether creative work offers alternative gratification, and why different lifestyles provoke such anxiety. Throughout history, many people have sought solitude without becoming serial killers. Some became great artists or saints. Consider Greta Garbo, who famously retired at 35 to live a simpler life with selective social engagement, demonstrating how one can choose solitude without dysfunction. Our confusion about solitude stems from trying to reconcile two opposing models of the good life. The Roman Empire valued cohesive cultural values centered on citizenship, while Christianity emerged with almost directly opposing values focused on personal interior relationships with God. Until the 14th century, solitude was highly valued, with saints and hermits as cultural celebrities. The Renaissance and Reformation challenged this, but the Enlightenment brought a radical shift back to Roman social values. By the late 18th century, the Romantic movement emerged, elevating emotion over reason and celebrating solitude as a path to spiritual truth. This tension continues today in our brittle compromise, emphasizing individual fulfillment through wider but thinner social connections. We've reached a moment where we're terrified of something we cannot reliably avoid. Solitude can happen to anyone. No number of Facebook friends guarantees protection. Fear of solitude is common enough to have clinical names, autophobia and monophobia, with symptoms like anxiety and avoidance. Even nomophobia, fear of being without mobile phone contact, affects up to 53% of users. The best treatment combines knowledge with gradual exposure. Start small, take longer baths, travel by train alone, spend evenings in a different room from others, or turn off your mobile. Once you feel secure accessing solitude, you may discover unexpected benefits, as Maitland did when she transitioned from sociable extrovert to solitude seeker, finding herself relaxing, gaining energy, and experiencing less depression. Many claim they don't have time for solitude, but this often masks fear rather than genuine time constraints. We've constructed leisure as predominantly communal, treating solitary hobbyists as geeks or potential loners. While some activities require company, many others can be enjoyed either socially or alone. Modern society has created artificial divisions between work, leisure, and maintenance that didn't exist historically. The solution is to reconsider existing leisure activities through a solitary lens. Running alone offers meditative benefits impossible in groups, a mute button on the world. Many activities work well solo: cinema visits, fishing, gardening, mountain climbing. Walking alone particularly intensifies emotional experience and fosters independence. The capacity for adult solitude begins in infancy. When a baby's immediate needs are consistently met, they naturally enter what psychoanalyst Donald Winnicott described as a Buddha-like state of relaxed attention, existing peacefully alone in the presence of the mother. Unfortunately, modern parenting's relentless emphasis on constant stimulation prevents many children from developing this vital capacity. Despite no actual increase in stranger abductions since the 1950s, growing parental anxiety has wrapped solitude in layers of fear. Carl Jung offered a remedy through active imagination, a sophisticated form of concentrated daydreaming bridging conscious and unconscious awareness. During a personal crisis in 1913, Jung embarked on a radical experiment in structured solitude, confronting his deepest fears through systematic self-analysis while recording observations in his famous Red Book. This technique remains valuable for exploring solitude safely, helping individuals reconnect with childhood memories of positive, solitary experiences. When people claim solitude is unnatural, they're often expressing disapproval rather than biological fact. Popular science reinforces this view, pointing to humans as social creatures alongside other primates. Yet, examining nature more carefully reveals nuance. While humans require cooperation for survival, our primate relatives demonstrate varied solitary behaviors. Gorillas forage alone and sleep in individual nests. Orangutans spend most daily lives in solitude. Even pack animals include solitary individuals, the lone wolf and nomad lion, who may remain solo or later form new groups. The romanticized image of highly social hunter-gatherer societies overlooks how much gathering and hunting happens alone. The spectacular communal reindeer hunts of northern societies are seasonal events, while most daily food procurement happens quietly and individually. Looking beyond modern boundaries reveals that solitude, in varying degrees, is simply a normal part of existence for many species, including our closest relatives. Throughout human history, across diverse cultures and contexts, those who have practiced solitude consistently report 5 overlapping benefits: deeper self-consciousness, heightened attunement to nature, enhanced relationship with the transcendent, increased creativity, and greater freedom. Solitude offers a unique opportunity to rediscover one's authentic self amid life's distractions. As Father Dioscoros, a Coptic desert monk, explained, "In the desert, in the pure, clean atmosphere, in the silence, there you can find yourself." Solitude uniquely enhances our connection with nature through clear, undistracted perception where nature reveals itself more fully, symbolic perception where natural elements take on deeper meanings, and a dissolution of boundaries between self and nature, creating profound interconnection. For many, solitude facilitates a relationship with the transcendent. Every major spiritual tradition recognizes solitude as essential for revelation. Even non-religious figures like Bernard Moitessier, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, and John Muir sought transcendent experiences through solitude in nature. Of all solitude's rewards, its relationship to creativity seems most self-evident. From Kafka to Wordsworth, Heisenberg to O'Keeffe, creators universally testify to solitude's necessity. Werner Heisenberg's breakthrough with the uncertainty principle illustrates this. After years of frustrated collaboration, a hay fever attack forced him to retreat alone to pollen-free Heligoland, where he quickly developed his revolutionary theory. Finally, solitude offers unique freedom, not just freedom from restraints, but freedom to become self-governing according to laws of your own choosing. Paradoxically, knowing yourself through solitude actually improves relationships, making them choices rather than desperate attempts at validation.